This kid is the greatest of all time. I don't know, you go back as far as you want to go. He can do it all. You saw it all the way up until today. You put the numbers on his back. Doesn't matter if it's flat and cobbled. Doesn't matter if it's in the mountains. Doesn't matter what time of year it is. Doesn't matter if it's on the white roads of Strade Bianche. He wants to race. He is simply the greatest of all time. Oftentimes people will want to talk to me about my career and my history with the tour and where I stand there. It doesn't matter. This guy is the GOAT, right? He is, and I said this as we were watching the race today and watching him just be so dominant and so in control. I said, listen, let's stop with all this. I said, this guy would mop the floor with Lance Armstrong. Mop it. And I mean it. And so it's may not be the most entertaining thing when it comes to watching a 3-week event, but it's a fact. He's the best of all time. And I would even say he is the most dominant athlete in the entire world. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Move Podcast. It is the last day, stage 21. I'm Lance Armstrong, joined by Sir Bradley Wiggins, Mr. George Hincapie, the Professor Spencer Martin, and today, Johan Bruneel. By the way, I don't know why we should have had Johan on more, but Johan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
He's riding so much these days that he doesn't have time to train with us.
Might have ridden more this month than the guys at the Tour de France.
I don't know about that.
No. I've been injured, guys. I've been injured. So I'm, my back is giving me problems. So, but I've been riding quite a bit.
Well, how are you?
I'm good. Good. Excited to talk with you guys about this, incredible finish of the Tour de France.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get into that. Alain, stage 21, what would we do?
Stage 21 from Thoiry to Paris-Champs-Élysées. From Thoiry to Paris-Champs-Élysées.
Merci. Merci mille fois. absolutely incredible.
I thought
that was an incredible stage. By the way, when they changed this stage from the traditional finish on the Champs-Élysées for that seemingly had forever, which was last year, I thought it was incredible. But this, Matthew Van Der Poel, what a legend. What a legend.
Yeah, that was absolutely insane. I think one of the most exciting Tour de France last stage finishes we've ever witnessed.
Yeah. And, I think we were sort of riffing pound for pound. Matthew Van Der Poel, I think we can all agree that he's probably the second best bike racer in the world. I thought it was great too. Of course, Tadej, and we're going to talk a lot about Tadej in today's show. But he just, forget all of his accomplishments, which speak for themselves. The fact that he just rocks up and he just always races. He made an attack, the first serious attack of the race, and then he's just always there. So impressive.
Yeah, incredible. And those 2 years we've had on the Champs-Élysées there, last year's was just as exciting in the rain, Wout van Aert winning. And then today, again, it's lived up to last year's race. Mm. So fantastic way to finish the tour.
Yeah,
and as you say, Tadej, there's not a day or a race he doesn't contest or take part.
That's right.
Yeah. Which is
yeah. One thing, like last year you saw him going for it. This year you see him going for it. I think it's a testament to the amount of respect he actually has for that race, because most people, when you're leading by 7 minutes, you're not going to take those kinds of risks to battle for position and potentially put your Tour de France victory at risk. But he loves the Tour de France.
Yeah, and I think we should also discuss the decision to stop the clock before they entered into those climbing circuits, if we can call them climbing circuits in Paris. They are hard, right? It is cobbled. It is technical. The small roads, Peloton's tired. Stopping the time just gives him a green light to just chill.
Yeah, exactly.
And I oftentimes think about I know exactly what I would have done. I never would have raced that day. I would have just sat in the bunch and got to the finish line. He can't. It's amazing that they put the numbers on his back, and he just races.
Yeah.
But with regards to Van Der Poel, I'm just Spencer and I were sort of chatting. That has to be the hardest effort he's ever made in his entire career. Now, that Amstel Gold race a few years ago was something that I had never seen before in the classics. But that effort today, I mean, he was, and you saw him after the finish, this man was dead.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned number two rider in the world. Well, he was toe-to-toe heavyweight boxing match with Pogacar today. And he still had 500 meter sprint, where Pogacar had nothing left. He just sat up. So, I mean, it gives you the indication of how strong Vanderpool was today, but how motivated he was for the victory. He said in the finish line he had been thinking about that stage already since watching it last year. But to be able to sprint like that when you got a guy like Mads Pedersen coming at you, Philipsen coming at you hard, and holding him off is, I think, one of the most exciting finishes we've ever watched in any racing.
And Johan, you'll remember this. I was in Paris. Luke was there at school. We came to visit. You came up and hung out with us. This was before the Olympics. 2024, which of course this was part of the Olympic circuit, we went up there to sort of preview the route. I had never been, honestly, to that part of Paris. I was like, wow, I didn't know this was here. But your thoughts on what you saw?
Yeah, I mean, you will remember, Lance, when you go up there 2 years ago, it's a lot steeper than it looks on TV. It's a lot harder to see these guys fly up there. Is incredible. But I mean, what a way for Van der Poel, especially for Alpecin, to finish this Tour de France. You know, in the beginning, nothing worked out. You know, they did all these lead outs for Philipsen. Nothing worked out. Then finally, Van der Poel wins this incredible stage 9, I think. Then finally, Philipsen wins stage 17. And today, they are first and second. And what a way to finish. I think Van der Poel's interview was interesting. He was quite emotional.
Yes.
First of all, he was completely empty. You know, he had trouble responding and thinking clearly. But as George says, you know, he said he was watching this stage last year from the couch. I think he abandoned because of illness last year. I mean, listen, if you look at the way this stage developed after the first attack, we had the four best riders, the four biggest names, I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, Van der Poel, Pogacar, Remco, and Pedersen. The top four of Tour de Flanders on away and the last stage of the tour. So, I loved it. It was, and today, I think the change in the course also with the finish a little bit further of Montmartre than last year makes it... there's a doubt whether it's going to be the attackers or the sprinters.
Yeah. We were not a fan of that, Johan, just so you know, as we were watching.
I know.
But it definitely leaves, it opens up the race. I mean, if you have a guy like Philipsen getting second, obviously it opened up the race and they were able to come back. I mean,
it looked like they were going to come back at one point and then Kofidis just got on the front.
And they slowed it.
Did we see where Kofidis ended up on the stage? Like they
kind of took up the running and then slowed it down.
Yeah, I don't fully.
Not on purpose. I mean, it's just
did get ninth, so I guess I guess you have to.
And, you know, we've gotten we're supposed to be very nice today.
We are being nice.
Oh,
yeah. I'm just stating the fact. This is an observation that I saw.
I know, and I was just kind of messing.
I'm always nice.
You are always nice. That is true.
Particularly about the Americans. Exactly. How'd they go today?
Good tour.
Ooh, today was not great. I think Jurgensen might have crashed there in the final. Was that him that crashed?
It might have been Perstrogna.
But he was chasing.
You don't want to finish the Tour de France with a crash. I've done that. It's not fun.
Do we think the result would have been different if it was the old finish, like the last year's finish? I don't think so. I think probably Vanderpool would
have had more of a gap.
I think Vanderpool does. Johan would be a good one to ask. I mean, look, Tadej Pogacar is also very fast. Johan, if those two guys,
I think Van der Poel still wins.
Yeah,
I think
that's right.
Yeah,
you know, it was a bit of a deja vu of last year, right? So the first two times Pogacar attacks, and then on the last time up Montmartre, it was actually Van der Poel who passed Pogacar, a little bit the same style as Wout van Aert with Pogacar last year. So yes. Van der Poel was never in doubt that he would not be able to follow Pogacar today, which I think makes a lot of sense because, you know, Van der Poel has been saving himself the last 3 days for this and Pogacar has been racing full gas. So,
Johan, I have two questions for you. One, why did they take the time away with 40K to go before the race even started? And two, how would have that affected the race, I think, pretty drastically if the time was still a factor?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, I heard that it was a last minute decision at the petition of the riders.
Okay.
the riders have asked for it, and ASO has basically, you know, said, okay, we'll do this. It definitely had nothing to do with the weather. I think last year made sense. Yep. Today, mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of a bit of a bummer, but then on the other hand, you see Del Toro Platz, if this is a real race, he could have potentially lost his second, his third spot.
Yeah, and then we're seeing also Pogacar not attacking. Want,
right? Came back pretty easy.
We're seeing Pogacar not attacking as hard because Del Toro was off the back.
Yes.
I'm just thinking it would have been a big effect if there was still time.
Well, it didn't. Look, I think it's a good question. I don't think it nullified the racing. I mean, no. If you didn't know that they had agreed to stop the overall time before the circuits, kind of wouldn't know that. I mean, still great racing.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
It's interesting that last year did make sense with the rainy road. I mean, these are cobbled streets. Johan and I were up there. I mean, it's I wouldn't want to descend those cobbled narrow roads in the middle of an urban environment in the rain. But yeah, look, I mean, and props to ASO, and we'll get in, we're going to have to talk about this route and just some reflections on the route. But this innovation, let's just call it an innovation, on a very, very traditional finish has been a plus. I think it's been unbelievable. And we were all talking about how great it was. And then, of course, Debbie Downer over here. Johan, actually, back, help us here. This might not actually be true. I questioned Spencer whether or not he read the article on April 1st. But in the future, there are plans in the not so distant future that they are going to convert the Champs-Élysées into an urban park.
I have not. I don't know about this. I don't know about
this. It's like a 300 million euro project where they're redesigning the Champs-Élysées. Maybe they keep a road. Lance brought up a good point. What do they do with all the traffic?
Yeah, there's There is a lot of that is the main artery.
Well, you mentioned going underneath, but the subways underneath already aren't there.
Yeah,
so that could be really expensive and complicated.
Elon,
we could be getting out of our lane here with the urban,
or it could be a gravel finish on the Champs-Élysées. There's a gravel road next to the grass.
Did you guys, Johan? Did you catch this All World Championships breakaway? All World Champions, where it was Pedersen, Vanderpool, Pogacar,
wow,
Remco, like that. Well, what a time we're living in.
Yeah,
and top four, the four guys from the Flanders break.
Yes. I mean, we might get a little negative in the second half of this, but I think the racing, like the top level racing, has never been better.
Well, I wouldn't call it negative. Yeah, we're not supposed to be negative today.
I'm going all positive trouble today, baby.
We are in timeout. All of you.
Just you.
What is the move of the day? Of course, the move of the day is brought to you by 8 Sleep, the smart mattress cover that easily goes on top of any existing mattress, heats or cools each side of the bed independently from 55 degrees Fahrenheit to 110 degrees Fahrenheit. And 8 Sleep is the official sleep partner of Anna Armstrong and Team UAE. 8sleep.com/themove. Bradley?
Matthew Vanderpool.
Yeah,
I mean it's
might be the one day where we all have to agree.
Yeah, and the way he did it, of course, phenomenal.
Vanderpool, incredible. Been thinking about it for a year and pulls it off. Said is one of his biggest wins ever, and he's won about everything you can imagine winning. So super impressive.
Vanderpool can pick his spots better than anybody. He goes into hibernation, comes out, boom, just gets the win that he wants.
Go on.
Yeah. I mean, I picked Van der Poel yesterday to win the stage. The way he won it, and you know, especially how much it means to him. Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who's won everything you can imagine, and you know, to win that last stage in Paris, the way he did it, definitely for me is Van der Poel too.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. 4 for 4.
That's
5 for 5. My bad.
It's 5 for 5. I think we all agreed.
That is the first time.
Yeah.
He also has an upcoming World Mountain Bike Championship.
I know.
Competing, doesn't he? It shows his versatility.
Against Tom Pidcock, I believe.
Ooh. Yeah. I'll tune into that.
Yeah.
Also today brought to you by Roka. I've been wearing Roka for years. They just keep getting better and better. On the bike, traveling every day, they're the sunglasses I keep coming back to. They look incredible, but the optics are what really set them apart. Crystal clear, scratch and fog resistant lenses, and they stay put no matter how much you sweat. Anybody who's rode with me knows what that's all about. It's not just cycling glasses anymore. Prescription glasses, prescription sunglasses, readers, all built with the same performance tech. And every pair, hand-built to order in Austin, Texas. The Move listeners get 20% off. Go to Roka, R-O-K-A, roka.com and use the code THEMOVE at checkout. I almost have these memorized. Last one of the tour for us. Good friends at Element. Been with us a long time. You guys rock. You built an incredible business. So proud of you. Psyched to be your partners. It is our favorite drink for long rides. Hot days in the summer, it doesn't matter. Element is a zero sugar electrolyte drink mix with everything you need and none of the junk. If you've ever dealt with cramps, headaches, fatigue, or you're just sweating buckets on the bike, hydration isn't optional. All the other sports drinks out there, loaded with sugar and artificial garbage. Element has none of that. No sugar, no dyes, no fillers, just sodium, potassium, magnesium, the stuff that actually works. And now we also have the 12-ounce sparkling can. Stay salty, my friends. Right now, they're giving the Move listeners a free 8-count sample pack with any purchase. Go to drinklmnt.com/themove. That's drinklmnt.com/themove. Woo! UAE, first and third.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad.
It's hard for a team to get two riders on the podium.
Yeah. It changes. Well, it didn't change the tactics that much for them this year. Maybe a couple of stages, but yeah, first and third Tour de France. Two young riders. Del Toro got second last year in the Giro, is showing that he is, you know, the next perhaps great upcoming stage racer. We'll be seeing a lot more of him in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's only done two grand tours, hasn't he?
Yes,
finished on podium in both of them.
Yeah.
It's not bad, is it?
It's really good. Yeah.
And I guess should have won the Giro.
Yeah, he just punted it.
Yeah,
on the reason still unknown to us.
Johan, you've directed a team with two riders on the podium. Not easy to do.
Not easy to do. I think several times actually.
Yeah.
2009 and 2007, if I'm not mistaken. No, it's not easy, but this definitely looked a lot easier than my experience, because these guys really get along really well. Pogacar was the ideal teammate. I think that's what sets Pogacar apart. You know, I mean, he's the strongest guy. He could have won, in my opinion, he could have won 8 stages if he really decides to go for it. Mm. He decided to win 5. Today could have been a 6th, but and then, you know, being in the leader's jersey, being the ideal teammate. I mean, what he did yesterday, for example, is something you've never seen. You know, 60K to go, he goes to the front and starts to be the luxury gregario of Del Toro, with only one thing in mind: keep him on the podium.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, you're a fan of that.
I liked yesterday. Yeah. Yesterday, I liked what he did.
Yeah. How long was that pole, Johan? It was like a 45-kilometer-long pole.
60K.
Well, he got on the front at 65, right? And then got off at 20. Crazy.
That's men and
boys.
Okay.
Men and boys. He was still pacing Del Toro at the end.
But just to sit on the front of a GC group.
Crazy. Like the valley in between
that's
the climbs.
Insane.
Still pull up the climb. It's mind-boggling.
Well, Johan, I don't know if you watched yesterday's show. It wasn't my boys here didn't love it. I thought it was.
Yesterday, incredible. I liked it. I liked it, and I said.
But today you don't.
You guys can confirm. I mean, what he did yesterday, for example. I mean, the downhill after the Galibier. You go down the Galibier, and then it's the Lotharre, basically. To drive the group there, it's a 4% downhill, and in the wheel you're not pedaling, and it's, what is it, like 20K or something, 17K. He just went and didn't matter. Then they got to the Col de Sarenne, and he was still the boss, basically deciding whatever was going to happen. So that's just impressive.
I mean, we've never witnessed this domination. I think
we get to talk about that. And we're going to take a break here in a second. But the second half of the show, we're going to devote it to really our reflections, our thoughts, and about the 2026 tour. There's a lot to talk about. A lot of it good, some of it not so good. But we got to just kind of talk about the things that we're leaving here that are in our heads. So we're gonna break that down. I mean, this is obviously, we are seeing something that has never been done before. Fact.
Yeah. You know?
So we got to talk about it. But we will be back in 3 minutes and 32 seconds. Today's episode brought to you by DraftKings. This summer, whatever you're watching, baseball, golf, soccer, car racing, or even the Tour de France, DraftKings has you covered for every single moment of it. The DraftKings Sports app is now available in all 50 states, bringing the game straight to your fingertips wherever you are. New DraftKings customers sign up with the code THEMOVE. Spend $5 to get 150 in rewards within 14 days. Includes all markets. That's the code THEMOVE in partnership with DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Bet with DK Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-MY-RESET. Connecticut? Call 888-789-7777. Visit ccpg.org. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas, bet tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 plus, void in Canada. Event contract trading with DraftKings predictions involves risk of loss. Availability varies. Predictions offer void in New York. Bet to get bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Trade to get predictions dollars that expire in 1 year. $50 in rewards. Issued every 7 days via click to claim for 14 days. One non-withdrawable reward redeemable. Terms at dkng.co/offer. Limited time offer.
And we are back. Last day. God, it's long. It's long. 3 weeks. Let's see here. I had a question before we get to a couple other things. I do want to talk about Paul Seixas. I mean, it's, we've said it many, many times. I just want to remind everybody, this rider, he's 19 years old. He is the great French hope. We have not seen a rider this young since 1937. He finished fourth in the Tour de France. There is a lot there was before, and always will be a lot of expectation of him. I thought he performed incredibly well. My question for really for Bradley, not that you're not technical, George, but I'm going to point this one to Bradley and to Johan. The guy that you saw, the 19-year-old Paul Seixas you saw this year that finished fourth in the Tour, what, how many minutes down would he have been?
A few minutes down. Yeah. I think like 11 minutes down.
Okay.
But we shouldn't focus on that.
But there. No, he's there, right?
Yeah.
And I'll start with you, Bradley. What, for him to be, in terms of percentage points, percentage-wise, how far off Tade is? Because you think a 19-year-old, they're just going to improve. So if you start to say, you know, from 19 to 20, obviously, is that 1% better? Is that 3% better? I don't know. But what, I guess, first of all, what percentage points behind him is he? Or how much does he have to improve in order to be as good, if not better, than Pogacar?
Well, I think I would say that that's a long way off.
Okay.
To be better than Pogacar.
Yep.
And I think the next Tour de France winner will be decided when Pogacar decides to walk away from the sport.
Yep.
But in terms of how far he is away from Del Toro, who was third, and he was up till yesterday, he was only 20 seconds behind for most of the Tour. And then to Remco, who wasn't that much further ahead until the time trial. So he's not a million miles away from those guys, which I would say are going to be his big rivals in the next 8 to 10 years, by which time we would expect Tade to not be involved in the sport anymore. But at 19, to finish fourth in the Tour de France is quite some achievement. I mean, this guy was a junior at the World Championships that Van der Poel won in Glasgow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. And he still rode the Junior World Championships into the year after as well in Zurich. And it's we get used to young riders performing well at the Tour de France now because of what Tade has done, Egan Bernal when he was 21, et cetera, et cetera. So it's become normalized to these age, the age of some of these guys and what they're doing. But you go back 10, 15 years, if a 19-year-old was even in the Tour, let alone challenger for the podium, it would have been incomprehensible. So,
Johan?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think what Seixas did is incredible, especially because he has been racing always at every single moment when the favorites were racing. Mm. He has never taken advantage or tried to get the time with a breakaway. At every single point, he has taken his responsibility. I have never seen him complain. I've never seen him do something that he wasn't happy with a rival. He's always been riding whenever he had to ride. So to be fourth is incredible. in terms of improving, he will improve, but I don't think he will improve that much. I think it's a junior that's already very optimized, which nowadays when you want to be top of the world, you have to do everything you can. If you compare, for example, Pogacar's first year professional, he was winning a lot of races, and in his second year he won the tour, but Pogacar's had an incredible margin of improvement still.
He had a lot of runway. A lot of runway.
Yes, that's not the case with Sixas, but you know, if he stays at this level in terms of power output, gets more endurance, which he will, because he will do more races, and gets more experience, he's going to be up there with Del Toro and Remco, I think. So the question is now, you know, what does his future look like? You know, which decision will he make? We've heard a lot of rumors about changing teams.
Yep.
I personally think he should stay at Decathlon. I think he should stay there as a French rider. This is a team that has the resources. They can build around him. As Bradley says, I think as long as Tadej decides to go for the Tour de France, there is not going to be, barring, you know, any unforeseen circumstances, there is not going to be another Tour de France winner.
Well, that's interesting. It goes to the point of what we made yesterday, that these young riders, like Enzo's age, are already just, I mean, it is micromanaging and Six Sigma across the board. Everything is analyzed. Everything is studied. Everything is thought through, whether it's nutrition, whether it's aerodynamics, whether it's training, recovery, race schedule, teams. I guess I would throw it back at you, Johan, and say, okay, well, if you feel like a 19-year-old Paul Seixas is already pretty optimized, then what is a 22-year-old Isaac Del Toro? Is he also optimized, or does he have runway?
Can I chime in Johan does?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go. Because Johan, go ahead.
Correct me. I know the sport's completely changed. The game has changed. But I think, well, the one thing that has not changed, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, when you do a grand tour, you step up another level.
It changes.
Yeah. So I'm kind of disagreeing with you in terms of him being totally optimized. I think now he has one grand tour, not just a grand tour we just rode around Packville, a grand tour we got fourth place with the pressure of entire country behind him. I think personally, he's going to step up a game just from having this in his bank account now.
Mm-hmm. Well, also a 19-year-old body is not as developed as a 23-year-old. I do think he'll probably improve just because he is a teenager currently, and he will not be a teenager in the future.
I was surprised, Johan. I was surprised by your answer. I hear you loud and clear, but I didn't expect you to say that.
Yeah, I said he will improve because of the experience.
Yep.
Sorry, somebody's calling
me. Here we go.
That's Sixas's agent calling you, going, Johan, what the
fuck? No, it's a young guy who wants to be a cyclist. My son.
Is he home yet? Or is
my godson, by the way, my godson.
Yeah.
Tell him not to do it.
No, but in terms of Sixas, I think, you know, what I agree with you, George, you know, a grand tour does make you stronger. And, you know, by doing more races, he will obviously get more experience and more endurance. I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, what can he do more now? To still improve. I don't think he can do much more because from what I gather, the guy's a super professional, obsessed cyclist who wants everything to be at the maximum, which is obviously a great attitude. But listen, he's going to improve, but it's going to be a natural process. I don't think his power output. I mean, listen, when we see him going up Lara Dut with Pogacar in Liège-Bastogne-Liège, you know, I don't think he can get much, much more stronger in terms of power output than that.
But we also,
he can reproduce it over time.
We also saw Pogacar put 2 minutes into Roglic, win the Tour de France, and we go, holy shit, that was the best performance we've ever seen. And I think he's gotten maybe, I don't know what percentage points better, but
and he physically looks like a different person. Yeah, you go look at those photos. I'm not saying this to be mean, but he has like baby fat on him.
Yeah.
And now he looks totally different. Yeah. So, and that's probably just natural, the body getting older and maturing.
Do we also think that this route this year probably didn't suit Sixas as much as an old school?
I agree. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's had a very good performance on a route that probably didn't suit him.
Yeah.
Well, we are, I have a feeling, going to talk about the route, the 2026 route. We have some thoughts on that. Before we jump into, I guess, kind of our send-off, our takeaways from the 2026 tour, we are, for one last time, going to go to the call-in line. I'm not going to put the number up because, well, actually, you can call. If you just want to talk to George, you can call that number. But last day of voicemails. I loved this little feature this year. Caller number one.
Yes, hello. My name is Mick. I'm from Nebraska. Longtime fan. I was just wondering why nobody commented about Carapaz passing up Poos from a crash. I remember, like, all of the GC riders waiting for their fellow competitors during crashes. Is that not the case for non-GC riders? Thanks. Bye.
Man, when it's 5K to go, it's game on.
It doesn't matter. They both would have lost.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who crashes. Even the GC guys, well, potentially they would not have waited either. It's like, it's his responsibility to stay upright. Carapaz was taking just as many risks as he was. And it was just a battle, a mental battle of attrition. Apparently he missed a feed with 20K to go, and that shit happens, man. When you're all out, you make mistakes, and it's easy to watch on TV and critique it. But as a rider, you know that, like, man, he was putting his heart and soul into that victory, and unfortunately it didn't work out.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, too close to the finish. The race is on. Got to stay upright. And I do think, I mean, we got the news today that my speculation yesterday was that he was bonking a little mm-hmm. bit, and it's just, you know, you're cross-eyed. It's hard, yeah, hard it's to hard. Descend full gas, and yeah. We got the intel that he did miss a feed. Now, whether or not all of that is true, we don't know. But to your question, I mean, it's just, you got to race at that point.
Yeah. Well, like, let's say Lance is waiting for Jan Ulrich. Lance knows that there's no one's going to pass them. Like, yeah. Jan Ulrich is the only variable in that equation. But if Carapaz waits for Kuss, they both lose because the GC guys would have caught them and passed them. So it's a little bit different of a situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if and not to keep harping on this, but even if Lance and Jan Ulrich were going for the finish, 3K to go, he's not going to wait and give him the win. Like, you fall. That's part of cycling. You just keep going, I think.
Should Jan have kept going
on Luzardo?
Yeah. Well, so open that debate up.
I think that's different. They weren't actually going for the sprint right there. It was still at the bottom of the climb. Yeah, it was
early in the climb.
Yeah.
Caller number two.
Hey, guys. Jim from New Jersey. Just curious if you guys think that the race directors or the people that make the route for the Tour de France will start looking to change that for next year. Pagacar won the Tour de France on stage 6 of this year's tour. Just curious if you guys think that they'll start changing the route up, maybe, you know, making sure that this is a little bit more exciting. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Mm. I think this is just a sneak peek of our takeaways. This is one of our takeaways of this 2026 Tour de France. What I will say before we get to those is, look, it's their race. We have said this many, many times. Nobody knows what the route. And, you know, I'm often shocked when I've talked to just everyday people. I say, well, you know, the route changes every year.
Yeah, they don't know.
And most people are like, it does? It's not the same route every year? I'm like, no, it changes. And so most people don't know that. It's their race. They spend, you know, and all the things get factored into which cities they go through, towns they go through, which whether those are financial interests or, and of course they, you know, normally 1 year go clockwise, next year go counterclockwise.
Yeah.
But we won't know that until October, but it is their event. I mean, they could do whatever they want. So they typically, as we said a week or so ago, they like to, if you have a guy like Pogacar or in my generation, they like to build a route that makes it challenging for you. They want excitement. They don't want you to win year after year. So they do sort of try and in some ways, Tade proof the tour or me proof the tour. That never works. Never works. The best man always wins this bike race. And so it is their race. It is up to them. Terry Guvno, who...
I mean, it's interesting on that, trying to explain to people that don't really follow the Tour de France, but everyone's aware of what the Tour de France is, how the tour is starting in Edinburgh next year and heading it down to Liverpool and then to Cardiff and trying to get their heads around how the Tour de France is going to be in Scotland and the UK next year for three stages.
Yeah. I mean, again, these are, and by the way, I do not blame them at all, right? The Barcelona and the region of Catalonia paid ASO $11.5 million to host the start of the tour. It was great for Barcelona. We said it on those first days, like, wow, one of the winners today was Barcelona. Like, it looked incredible. One of the winners today was Paris. The images, the helicopter shots, Montmartre. You're watching this going, I want to go there.
Yeah.
In Edinburgh and who knows? I mean, they're probably paying in the same range, 10, 11, 12 million bucks. So that comes in. That doesn't affect the sporting, to me, as far as I'm concerned. That doesn't affect the sporting nature of the event. Let it start wherever. I get more concerned with just the route when it comes to the sporting side of it.
Well, like last year, they did wait for the mountains because what the caller said, Tadej wins it on stage six. We didn't have a mountain stage until stage 12 last year, and he won it on stage 12. So you'd have to do no mountain stages if you wanted to Tadej proof it. Yeah. He'd probably still win, though, right? Mm-hmm. If it was all, let's say, cat fours or below, Tadej probably still,
Wins it.
Yeah.
He still wins it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you saw him today. He was rode away from everybody on a cat four climb.
Yeah.
And the first stage into Barcelona, or second stage, he gave Del Toro the win. I mean, he can win on any terrain, as we see. Yeah.
Well, it's been fun taking y'all's calls. We will certainly be doing those more and more in the future. I should have mentioned that call-in line, sponsored by our friends Hyper Ice and Normatec. Been using Normatec for, gosh, showing my age, 15 plus, maybe 20 years. They deliver sequential pressure throughout the legs, helping them feel refreshed, lighter, and ready for the next ride. Get 15% off HyperIce products now with the code THEMOVE15 at hyperice.com/discount/THEMOVE15.
I have a friend that, this is not a joke, he's developed a Normatec addiction, so he will be using that code. They like
addiction.
We can't get them out of these Normatecs.
Yeah, I got my buddy just bought the Sleep 8 as well. And
So we felt like we've been through some stuff, overcome some stuff, and kind of on the right track, or just keep crushing.
Yeah,
this poor fucker's got enormous addiction.
Jonathan Kaplan
could have been could have been a lot worse. Lance Arita's every day weren't good. Normatex every day, dude. Seek help now.
Driving around DC looking for the next Normatec. I do hit
high-priced drill every day. I'm not going to lie. I'm addicted to that.
You know what? We're sending prayers to this young man.
And he's a friend of yours?
You'd be a good friend of mine, yeah.
The first week I was staying with you, I'm like, dude, where's your drill? You were like hiding it in your room, and I know you always have one around. So
dark stuff.
Takeaways. I guess I'll kick us off here. We're going to let's just have a quick round table discussion about that. And Johan, we would love for you to chime in here. You can't leave this tour without talking about Tadej Pogacar. And look, we throw it around all the time. People have questioned it for years. I don't think they question it anymore. This kid is the greatest of all time. You go back as far as you want to go. He can do it all. You saw it all the way up until today. You put the numbers on his back. Doesn't matter if it's flat and cobbled. Doesn't matter if it's in the mountains. Doesn't matter what time of year it is. Doesn't matter if it's on the white roads of Strade Bianche. He wants to race. He is simply the greatest of all time. Oftentimes people will want to talk to me about my career and my history with the tour and where I stand there. It doesn't matter. This guy is the GOAT, right? He is, and I said this as we were watching the race today and watching him just be so dominant and so in control. I said, listen, let's stop with all this. I said, this guy would mop the floor with Lance Armstrong. Mop it. And I mean it. And so it's may not be the most entertaining thing when it comes to watching a 3-week event, but it's a fact. He's the best of all time. And I would even say he is the most dominant athlete in the entire world.
Probably true. It's hard to think. Like, Michaela Schifrin won the Slalom Olympics. I think her margin of victory was as big as the last 7 Olympic winners combined. That would be the only person I could think of that's even close. But yeah, he's incredible. Johan, what do you think about that? Would Tadej mop the floor with Lance?
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It feels good.
He's in a league of his own.
I do.
He did. Okay, so for the moment, he did 7 times.
That's definitely going to be a soundbite, by the way. Like, it's sorry to interrupt. Like, yeah. I keep reading like things that we say become like news. That's
that will for be sure. in the paper.
Go ahead, Johan. Sorry.
Yeah. So he did the Tour de France 7 times. He won it 5 times, 2 times second. He's 27 years old and he won the Tour 5 times. Lance, you were 27 when you won your first Tour de France.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Remember that. So, you know, I mean, this guy can just do it all. I think Pogacar, it's, you know, we can't compare, of course, but, I think he would have beaten you probably
handily,
fair and square.
Yeah. I think he's fair. Yeah, I agree. Obviously.
Yeah.
I got a couple quick takeaways.
Yeah.
If that's okay. Well, one,
of course it's okay.
Really
this
enjoyed,
is your show.
Yeah. I really enjoyed, and I think this goes against the grain of these everybody in this show, is the reemergence of Remco Evenepoel as a GC, you know, top GC rider in the world, because for many reasons. I mean, this guy, I think he's a guy that many people can relate with. He has bad days. He gets dropped on climbs. He's dropped out of Grand Tours, but he's won the Tour of Spain. He's the Belgian prodigy. He gets so much hate for being this Belgian young kid that's come up through the ranks of soccer, then junior to straight to pro. But he keeps coming back. He doesn't give up. I mean, he was arguably the second best climber in the race at the Tour de France, and he is just getting better. He's getting paid a ton of money, a ton of pressure, but that doesn't faze him. And to me, he's more of like the people's champion, a human champion. Tade, obviously, like, look, he wears his emotions on his sleeve. I know you guys criticized yesterday. He's yelling at his PR guy, like, I didn't win. Who else would do something like that? Lance would do the same exact thing. You would be pissed you didn't win, but he's still in second place. I like it. I think to me, he is the people's champion, and he's somebody that a lot of us can relate to.
I think there's
secondly,
something to this.
And Bradley's going to
make fun of
me.
Can I just say one thing? Because you're wrong about one thing. Let me tell you what I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
If I spent 3 weeks on the road in France trying to win a bike race and ultimately win in a bike race, and I had 20, 30 staff people around me, I would never, ever dress them down on global television.
Yeah.
Ever. That's his problem.
Okay.
Right? That, I mean, you just don't, you might feel it, you might think it, but do not, these people, they never get seen. They never get glory. They never get credit. You never do that ever. So that's the difference.
Secondly, and then I'll let you guys go. I think Bradley's gonna make fun of me, but the whole purpose behind this team that I'm building and my second job I'm going back to after this is the fact that we had 6 Americans in the Tour de France. NBC, our fans who are watching right now, imagine having all of these guys on the same team.
Yeah.
The effect it would have on viewership in the United States, on sponsorship. I'm not saying I'm the person to bring that to the table, but I'm trying. And that's my goal. And we all need purposes. We all need challenges. Hell, these guys might not even like me, but they like the concept of an American team in the Tour de France with mainly American riders.
Which guys may not like you?
Well, I'm just saying, there's 6 Americans in the race.
Everybody likes you.
They do like me, but I'm just saying, for the people watching that hate me and don't want me involved in the
nobody
team.
Nobody hates you, George.
They all want an American team. So this is really motivating to me to see how strong they were throughout those 3 weeks, how impactful they were for their teams, and just makes me really hopeful and motivated to keep building my project.
Mm. There actually is an American cycling rider that is like always pretty mean towards George. Like, what is the deal?
But he doesn't know George. If he knew him, he wouldn't think that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So badly.
Yeah. And so the people like that, they're not even worth worrying about.
That's it's very wise.
Bradley, anything come to mind?
Those are good takeaways.
I mean, my main thing is Tade. You know, I mean, of course, Mads Pedersen, fantastic performance,
fantastic.
You know.
So
but
fantastic.
Tade, you know, I mean, I'm a big fan of Eddie Merckx, of course, and I've been the one touting that he's still the greatest. But Tade, for now, for me, has taken over that mantle of Eddie Merckx. The 5 standout moments of this tour were Tade. And we talk about the imagery of Paris and that, but Tade is always part of that imagery in making the race. Mm. Today, Alpe d'Huez, Barcelona, when he gave his teammate the stage win. Of course, the Tourmalet, another big imagery kind of moment in the Tour de France. But Alpe d'Huez was still something we're all trying to digest and get our heads around. I think because we get so used to these performances, we get kind of become, you know, we're very conditioned to seeing these great performances, whether it's Paris-Roubaix, whether it's the Tour of Flanders, whether it's, you know, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, what he did in the Tour of Swiss, and it's just... But what he did on Alpe d'Huez, I think, we will still be talking about in 50 years' time. And I don't think anyone's going to break that record.
No, I agree with that. And they even asked him at the finish, will he be at the start line for the Tour of Spain? I mean, I cannot get my head around that.
How do you build motivation?
It's a better race than it used to be.
Yes, I know, but I'm not trying to discount the race. I'm just saying it's like if you wish a 6 month vacation for anybody,
yeah.
I mean, this guy deserves it. I can't even imagine in a month's time, you got to go gear up for another 3 week Grand Tour.
That's not even talking about the Worlds. If he does well, he's still all in for the Worlds.
But he does have to stay in shape for the Worlds. Yeah. So he's got to do something. You might as well get the free food.
By the way, he's swung the world. The free food.
Guys, I just want to chime in here.
Yes, sir.
I know some people who are very close to him, and you know, it keeps coming back to me that this is just a guy who loves to ride his bike and loves to race. You know, he's apparently not chasing anything. He just wants to race. I have my doubts about that, because obviously the reason why he's gone to the Tour of Spain, because he wants to win all three Grand Tours. And, you know, now that he's in great shape and he's not, last year he was sick, you know, he had a bad knee, which actually he said today or yesterday in the interview before the stage. But it's apparently from people who work with him and teammates, what they see of this guy on training camps is unbelievable. Hmm. The guy's a very hard worker, always pushes himself, is extremely demanding on himself, and just wants to always push it further and further. So he just loves to ride his bike.
Hmm. You know, it would explain. I watch him. You know, I watch his post-race interviews, and you just, and again, I'm not an expert in this, but you watch him. You watched him today, right? This guy was ready. He was ready to go home. People often ask me, and I reflect that now at 55 years old, I've had the time to reflect on why those moments, there wasn't joy and there wasn't just sort of this presence, right? Or this living in the moment, so to speak, when I was there. And it was because I loved, more than winning the Tour de France, I loved process. I loved training, planning, scheming. I loved the process in order to win the Tour. And when it was over, the process was done. And so what does that mean? That means, yeah, say hi to everybody, but it's now time to start the process again. Perhaps that is him, Johan. I mean, it you just said it, right? That's, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in some of these camps. I mean, that would be inspiring.
Yeah. He also, if we're being honest, Johan, tell me if I'm wrong here. I don't know if he went that deep in this Tour. There's a lot of days, of tough mountain days where he was holding back.
God, I hope he went deep on Alpe d'Huez.
Alpe d'Huez was full gas.
Thank you. But that's just a trick. You got to get that training effort in. You know, you don't want to get out of shape in the third week of the Tour. Yeah.
You know, he didn't go full gas yesterday. We know that. He looked really, really in control. He didn't go full gas on Plateau de Soleçon when Remco won. I think he did. I think he went three times full gas: the time trial, Tourmalet, and Alpe d'Huez. That's the three times he really went full out.
So it makes it easier to back up and do another Grand Tour, I guess, if you can get past the mental hurdle.
And the three times at the Marmont, or however you call it today, he looked pretty like
he was in control.
Yeah.
Another takeaway for me, I think we just got a couple more, is the route. I said it at the start. I didn't understand the route that they picked. I thought it was underwhelming. And I think it showed, right? And what they do next year. And I think we're sort of secretly crossing our fingers. Wow, let's go back to a traditional thing. Meh. Who knows, right? We'll find out in mid-October or late October. I thought the route didn't do the course, or didn't do the race and the dynamics of the race and the story of the race any justice. No arguments there.
Well,
I thought Barcelona was beautiful. Well, the team time trial format, I really enjoyed that. Love team time trial. It's one of my favorite
events. It feels like a year ago.
It does. But, you know, I don't know. I didn't mind the course that much.
I think next year is different because, you know, since it starts in Scotland, you know, have in mind that if they have to start in Barcelona, they have to do the Pyrenees early on. There's no other choice.
Of course.
You know, so I think after stage six, we already knew. I mean, although I think that they did design that stage with the intention of, okay, let's do the Tourmalet, but let's not finish on a hard climb. Well, that didn't really matter. But next year, if they start in the UK, they're kind of free. I mean, normally they're going to start in the north of France when they get out of the UK. So it could be a traditional, you know, first a few flat stages and then either Pyrenees or Alps. I think next year will be a more classical design, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Let's get back to Futuroscope. Remember that place, the time trial mm-hmm. there? Let's just do like old school.
Lac de Vasier.
Yeah.
All right, final takeaway. I think for me, and I would love, I want everybody to chime in here, it's just the future of the sport. Where do we go? There's a couple ways to look at this. Look, I mean, Tadej is so dominant. It takes out the intensity and the excitement and the questions around who will win the yellow jersey. This kid is that good, right? And so that's sort of, you have to look for other storylines. That's sports, right? I don't know what people said when I was racing. Maybe they said the same stuff. I don't know. But the numbers don't lie, right? This is an event that globally, the television numbers are down significantly. I have them pulled up right here. France up marginally. I think the Paul Seychelles effect is real in France. Spain flat. Germany down 8%. Wallonia down 14%. Italy down 16%. The Netherlands down 16%. And Flanders, Remco's home, down 22%. Those aren't good, right? And I really enjoyed, and Spencer, you were quoted in David Siegel's article in today's New York Times about the ownership of this event, the control that the family has on the event, $170 million in global television rights that are sold every year, that not one red cent is shared with the Peloton. There's no other sport in the world like that. You have all the beauty, all the difficulty, all the just history of this sport and this event, and yet stuff is backwards. I leave here saying things have to change. And I will also say, and we saw this, and I aired my frustration when it happened. The fact that the only thing that gets the Tour de France on the cover of ESPN.com is somebody getting woken up at 2 a.m. to be drug controlled. That's a problem. That's our headline. That got us in the global sports news. No, we just said it. We are witnessing maybe the most dominant athlete in the world today. That, my friends, is the headline. Why are we still doing this? It is the dog chasing the tail.
What's your theory? Why is it down in Flanders? What's everyone's theory on that? Mine is no Wout van Aert.
The only thing that comes to mind when I think of that is we have had probably one of the best World Cups we've seen in many years. Yeah. And Belgium were in that till late stages of it. It was fairly late quarterfinals.
True.
And of course, England and some of the other nations. You've also got the problem in the UK of that is now not free to air.
This is a big problem and it's growing.
And so people are against paying to watch the Tour de France, where of course it used to be on terrestrial TV. But the World Cup might have impacted a little bit.
I should have added, and it's my fault. Those numbers that are, those viewership numbers that I just read off are compared to a 5-year average.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's just getting
they're real numbers.
It is getting really expensive to watch the tour in some countries. Not everyone has like Peacock is like an affordable streaming service, but
it's great as well.
I love it. There actually is a lot of key sports on there that you're going to have to get it to watch this fall. But
Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares is on there.
George's favorite Love Island. Don't forget. The man doesn't miss an episode of Love Island.
Women's Tour, right? Is also on there.
Women's Tour.
On here.
Peacock will have a lot of sports that you might want to watch. But
it's very user friendly.
It's great.
Okay.
But in the UK, you have to buy this like really expensive. I'm talking like $500 to $600 US a year. A bolt-on package is basically just cycling and like some Champions League games. Like, who is going to buy that? That makes me worry they're going to lose an entire country viewership. Yeah.
Yeah. Coupled with, look, we all have kids. We all have young kids. I see my kids. We see our kids. We see how they consume content. We see how they are connected to their devices, probably too much. In the future, right? Are my kids going to watch 200 skinny guys ride around France for 5 hours a day? It's something we have to think about.
Yeah.
It's in all sports have to think about this is how we look. Even in our America's pastime, but the game of baseball has had to make serious efforts to speed the game up and make it more interesting.
Well, the NBA viewing figures have been down.
Yeah.
The
NBA's been down.
The NBA's kind of a mess.
Right? Yeah.
But baseball, actually, old sport, you'd think stodgy. They said, wow, we got some problems.
Yeah.
And in 2 years, they fixed them all. It's an incredible viewing experience now.
And one thing we should point out, too, is the podium. I mean, think about the companies involved in the podium, UAE promoting tourism. They're justifying millions of dollars being spent on this team because it is a positive impact on their country. Decathlon, fourth place in tour, massive company, France. They are justifying their expense because they're promoting their company through cycling. Red Bull, one of the biggest investors in sports in the entire world, also justifying their expense. So there are a lot of positives, I think, that are coming out of the Tour de France.
Right. But all of those teams, not just the ones you mentioned, but all of the other ones are totally and completely dependent upon those title sponsors or any other form of sponsorship.
Yep.
The second those people, whether it's a wealthy person or the sheiks in UAE decide to go, sponsor Liverpool or something, whatever else, sailing, I don't know. The second they decide to leave is the second that team is gone. And so no other sport would have a company that's generating hundreds of millions of dollars, and the athletes and the teams and the team owners share in zero of that is ludicrous. Now, the only way to fix that is for those 200 guys, and I'm just generally saying 200 guys, to say, we're not coming. We're not coming collectively.
So let me turn this around, and I know I'm the devil's advocate always on this table, but Lance, Bradley, myself, we all made good money in cycling. What if we've been one of those guys that said, you know what, I'm going to skip a year or two from my salary that supports my family to help the future of the sport? Each rider, I just read an article that the average wage of the salaries of the riders in this Tour de France is around $600,000.
$440,000.
So you're coming from mostly blue collar families, never made that kind of money in your life, and now you're making that kind of money. Are you going to step away from that? I don't think so.
I'm not saying it's a guarantee. I'm just telling you that's the only way that you affect change.
Yes, I agree with that.
I do tend to agree.
And I'm looking at it from both ways, former rider and now a team owner. Yes, team ownership needs to have value, franchise value. We don't have that right now. We're 100% dependent on sponsorship.
Again, David Siegel's article in the New York Times today, if you guys are subscribers or can somehow walk by a newsstand, I thought it was, he spent some time, he spent 3 days at the tour. He lays it out there.
I was coming in to do the preview show, get a call from a guy, I don't know, it's David Siegel. He said, do you think I should write an article about the financial side of the tour? It's like, I don't think you could come up with a better article.
It's a great article.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we shouldn't end on a down note. Well, how about the vet? Let's do, is there anything nice or sort of warm and fuzzy we can say?
Warm and fuzzy.
We got the paella party tonight. This thing has become quite the monster. Every year, it started out as a small thing.
If you want to attend, call that number.
Anna and Melanie, a long time ago, started baking this paella for a few of us, and now it's like 50 of us.
Melanie's stressing about the 60-person paella.
Well, Anna has called in reinforcements, Mel, so do not stress. We've got other people to help with that. This thing's a big damn deal. Call that voicemail line. We'll drop you a pin, tell you where to go. Come to our party.
I want to finish on a positive note, too. I just want to say it's a real honor sitting here next to the goats of cycling history here. I mean, coming from basically redneck from Texas, streets of London, to winning the biggest race in the world. I mean, the most unconventional path you can get to winning the largest race in the world. So for me, like as a fan of the sport and knowing how much you guys have done in the sport, even though I've witnessed most of it, I was there with you guys for a lot of it. It's still an honor for me to be here, and I'm super grateful to be part of this month with you guys.
Thank you.
Last Phantom trivia of the tour. And we actually have a winner. We have the winner's name on here. The question yesterday was about the iconic Alpe d'Huez climb is defined by how many numbered hairpin bends? Answer, 21. Duh. After 3 weeks, all the questions, all the answers, all the submissions, our winner, Steven Steiner from just down the road, actually.
Boom.
Durango, Colorado, Sepp Kuss's hometown. Steven Steiner, congratulations. You win $5,000 towards the Ventum of your choice. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been fun. It has at times been eventful. It has at times been uneventful. But I will say this. I have not always been entertained in this tour, but this has been sitting here with these three or four, and Johan's around too somewhere. This has been one of the funner ones for me, and I mean it. I don't know why. So Bradley fucking locked in 2026. That might have been one of my highlights.
Lance was in a good mood for the most
of it. He was in a great mood.
So that made it really fun.
In a great mood.
It was all the cycling you're doing.
Yeah,
you
were in a good mood. Yeah.
Anyways,
one of the sights yesterday, I have to say, you didn't know that I saw you do this, but watching you change into your golf kit in the car park, that made me laugh. I was tickled by that.
Well, I had my golf shorts on for the show, and I was, I didn't want to wear.
I don't know why it tickled me so much. I think Max was next to me.
My son,
his shoes on.
My son met me here, and I mean, I'm not going to rock up on a golf shirt for the move, but I had it in the car, and I was getting tucked in, belt on, And Max and I had fun. Played with my mom and Ed. Wow. We had a hell of a time. So look at you. Fuck, next time I'm gonna change after I leave. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. It's been a hell of a good time. We will see you very soon.